Hi, this is Mort Fertel, and I want to welcome you to CD1, entitled A Surprising Solution to Your Marital Situation. I want to congratulate you for purchasing and diving into this program. I mean, you're really to be commended for taking the initiative to try to do something about the state of your relationship and transform your marriage. And you should really feel good and proud that you are putting forth this effort. You know, most people are in marriages that fall into one of two camps. Their marriages are either mediocre at best, or their relationship is dying a slow death. In both cases, most people in marriages like either of those situations are not really doing much about it. If the situation is that the marriage is mediocre, so they may just cruise along their whole life in what is basically a mediocre or unfulfilling relationship, not ever really take the initiative to try to attain true intimacy and love. And unfortunately, there's also so many situations where people know they're unhappy, they know they're unfulfilled, their relationships are completely unsatisfactory, but for whatever reason, they just don't have the courage, they don't have the strength to step up to the plate and actually do something about it. It could be that they're too angry, they're too frustrated, they're too hopeless, they don't have enough self-awareness. There's a million reasons why people aren't able to take the steps and put forth the initiative that you were able to do. And that really makes you different. It really makes you rare that you're ready to put in the work and you're ready to try to change the state of your relationship. And I want you to know that it's really an honor and a privilege to have the opportunity to share my knowledge and my wisdom with someone like yourself of such substantial character. And I mean that because it really does take a person of substantial character to be aware enough of their situation and humble enough to reach out to get help and courageous enough to do the work that it takes to make the difference. Now that I've built you up a little bit, and that was sincere, I want to also offer you a little reality check. It wasn't enough that you went onto my website, you got out your credit card, and you paid the price for this program. You're going to have to pay a higher price. And it's not a price that you pay to me. It's not money. It's the price of your time, the price of your effort. You're going to have to roll up your sleeves and get ready to really go to work. Because when it comes to marriages, when it comes to relationships, there is no quick fix. Relationships work by the law of the harvest. What does that mean? What's the law of the harvest? Well, think about it. If you want to harvest a crop, so in the springtime, you've got a plant, you've got a seed. And then all summer long, you have to water, you have to fertilize, and there's something else you have to do too. You got to wait. It simply takes time. And if you're patient and you go through all the steps of the process, then finally in the fall, you can harvest. There's no way to make the process go quicker. You can't skip any of the steps, right? Imagine skipping the spring and skipping the summer, and just a couple of weeks before harvest time, you decide you're going to cram for the harvest, like you used to cram in school for a test. Now, in school, you can sort of work your way through the system and cram. Of course, you pay the price long term. You don't really learn the material. But when it comes to the farm, you can't cram because there is a physical reality to the harvesting process. And relationships, marriages, work by the law of the harvest. There are principles that guide the healing process. And there are no shortcuts. You've got to pay the price. You've got to be patient. And you've got to go through every step of the process. And that's why this program is laid out for you in a very step-by-step form. And if you go through those steps as I will walk you through them, your relationship will be transformed. But you've got to become part of the process. You can't, using, once again, a farming analogy, you can't change the fruit without changing the root. Because whatever's happening in your marriage is a function of the roots being sour. There's something wrong at the foundation of your relationship. And I'm going to take you there to begin to fix it. But to get down to the roots, you've got to roll up your sleeves. You've got to really be willing to cultivate. And then in time, with healthy roots, you will begin to see the fruits of your efforts. But you can't simply just go to the fruit and try to change it without changing the root. There is no quick fix. You've got to be a person of integrity. Let's talk about integrity for a moment. Integrity, what does that mean? A person of integrity is a person who's integrated. A person whose thoughts and words is integrated with their actions. That's a person of integrity. That's what you're going to have to be. In other words, the fact that you bought this program means that you want your marriage to be changed. That's good. That's where your will is. And my guess is you've probably shared your will, your desire, with friends or maybe some family members or maybe your spouse. And so good, your words are aligned with your will and your thoughts, your thinking about transforming your marriage. That's good too. So far, we're integrated. Our thoughts, our will, and our words are all heading in the same direction. But there's a fourth piece that's crucial, and this is where most people fail. This is what really defines a person of integrity, and that is your actions. Your actions have to align with your thoughts, your will, and your words. You want, and you have said, and you are thinking that your marriage will be changed. But in order for that to happen now, you have to align your actions with your words and your thoughts, and that will make you a person of integrity. And once again, what I'm saying and what I am reminding you of is what it's going to take to go through this process and succeed in the way you really want to succeed. A person of integrity is when there is a consistency between what's in your heart and what's in your life. There's a consistency between the words you say and the life that you lead, the things that you do. And I'm going to be challenging you throughout this whole process to be a person of integrity, to be willing to do the actions that would be consistent with your desire for your marriage to change. Otherwise, it's like watering one flower while telling another one to grow. There's a disintegration there. Okay, it would be like saying if you own the company, firings will continue until morale improves. It doesn't make sense. You've got to be a person of integrity. You've got to line up your life with your desires. And when it comes to marriage, when it comes to renewing your relationship, fast is slow and slow is fast. What do I mean? In other words, if you try to go too fast, if you try to take shortcuts, you end up short-circuiting the process and failing to achieve your objective. But if you go slow, if you take the steps diligently, the truth is, that's the fastest way. And so when it comes to renewing your marriage, fast is slow and slow is fast. I'll give you an analogy or a metaphor. Think about what it's like to try to push a 500-pound flywheel on its axis. So you're pushing this flywheel, and of course it's incredibly heavy, and it's hardly budging. You begin to push it, it just begins to move ever so slowly. And you're pushing and pushing and pushing this flywheel around the axis, and your muscles are getting exhausted, and you are sweating profusely, and you are exhausted, and it just seems like this flywheel is not going anywhere. But you persist. And you continue to push this flywheel, and slowly but surely you realize that this flywheel is picking up momentum. And it's beginning to go a little faster. And before you know it, all of a sudden, there's a moment where it seems to click. And this flywheel seems to take on a life and an energy of its own. And it picks up speed so much so that when you push your hand against the flywheel to push the flywheel, instead of you pushing the flywheel, it's almost as if the flywheel is pulling your arm. It's got an energy of its own. It's clicked in. Now it's carrying you instead of you pushing it. Trying to transform your marriage, especially after you've encountered troubles, problems, affairs, whatever the situation may be, is kind of like pushing a 500-pound flywheel. It can be very, very difficult in the beginning. And you've got to be diligent. You've got to be persistent. You've got to be a person of integrity. But if you keep your actions aligned with your will, eventually you get to the place where, bang, it clicks in. You begin to get momentum. And at that point, things begin to happen very quickly. And that's why I say that fast is slow, and slow is fast. Because if you try to go too fast in the beginning and get to the end before you've really gone through the process, you end up short-circuiting the whole thing and you'll never get there. But if you go slow, you step by step and you're diligent, you'll be amazed at how quickly things will move along when you get to that stage where it just clicks in. And so you're going to have to put in the effort. There is no quick fix. You just can't go online, give your credit card, and have your marriage be fixed. You're going to have to do the work. Now, you went online, and you went to my website because you need help. You need a guide. It's like if you were to go on an expedition. So when you're going to some foreign terrain, you want somebody local there that's been there to help you, to guide you, to make sure you don't get lost. Okay? I've been where you are at. And I am, so to speak, your local guide. I'm going to give you the steps. I'm going to give you the instruction. I'm going to show you the way. But just like on an expedition, I could take you there. The guide can take you there. But you've got to climb the hill. At the end of the day, the effort that's got to be put forth is going to be your responsibility. I wish you well in that effort. You know, I'm under no illusion that this is an easy thing for anybody. And this topic of marriage for all of us is very personal and very private. And I don't want you to feel that I'm sort of coming from my clinical glass tower and I'm going to sort of give you the quick fix answers to problems and issues that have been developing and evolving in your lives for years. I want you to know that for me, this topic is very personal. And I don't just come at it from a clinical perspective, but I've been there. I feel that I can really feel your pain and feel your struggle. If you know the dictionary definition of the difference between empathy and sympathy, I feel I can really empathize. And I want to begin this entire journey together by sharing with you my story. And really beginning to do what you're going to be prompted to do, which is open up and really explore yourself. And I want to share with you a little bit about the journey that I've been on and I've had in my own marriage. My wife and I, we started out deeply in love, like most of you. I'm sure you can remember. Remember when you stayed up all night talking, surprised each other with thoughtful gifts, and spoke to each other in code words? I mean, you know that feeling of really being connected? That was us. I remember waiting by the phone. Couldn't wait for it to ring. But then something happened that destroys most marriages. We had a son who died when he was just 1 week old. And then we had twin daughters who also died as newborns. In less than 2 years, we lost three children. It was very difficult. My wife became depressed, understandably. And I immersed myself in work and became sort of a temporary workaholic. It was all I could do to deal with the situation. And very quickly, we became roommates instead of soulmates.
Now, your situation may not have been so tragic, but something happened. What was it? How did you lose each other? Or maybe you can't put your finger on why things aren't the same anymore, but somehow they're not. It's very common, too. For us, after losing three children, everything felt different. Instead of talking all night, it was a chore to talk just for a few minutes. Instead of using our code words, we had some other choice words for each other. And our relationship consisted of screaming matches and silent treatments. Somewhere deep in our heart, though, we knew we didn't want to lose each other. Isn't that how you feel? So we made a commitment to work on our marriage. Now, sometimes I tried and my wife didn't. Sometimes my wife tried and I didn't. Sometimes we tried together. We went through different stages of trying. What did we try? We tried the usual. You know, my wife learned about Mars. I learned about Venus. We went to therapy. We bought some self-help books. We tried the obligatory, honey, let me repeat what you said and make sure I understood you correctly, which I never did. And, you know, we applied conflict resolution strategies. We did all the usual. And let me tell you, nothing changed. It was very discouraging. We really experienced very little movement. Everybody was trying to get us to focus on our problems and our issues. What are the problems and the issues in your marriage? Ah, that's them? Here, let me give you some problem-solving strategies and some communication techniques so that you can learn to understand each other better, communicate more effectively, and solve these problems. And what we found was that we were just constantly immersed in the negativity of our relationship. And it was bringing us down even further. It was even more depressing. We didn't really want to be with each other. We didn't really want to talk to each other. Once a week, we got psyched up to work on our marriage. We got in the car. We went to our therapy session. Within minutes of the therapy session, the therapist would have us zeroing in on one particular nightmare in our relationship. And slowly but surely, I would fold my arms, and she would fold her arms. And then I'd cross my legs away from my wife, and then she'd cross her legs away from me. Before you know it, if you could sort of picture this body language, we're speaking about the horrors of our relationship, turned away from each other, having the worst hour of our entire week at the very time that we were ready to really go to work on our relationship. It really was a horrible experience. I remember leaving some of those sessions very depressed, and there was almost always silence in the car on the way back. And what was a 15-minute ride sometimes seemed like forever. And I not kid you when I tell you that there were many a times when driving into our driveway, I felt so disgusted and so much didn't want to be with my wife that I dropped her off at our house. Could have been 9, 10 o'clock at night, I don't remember exactly. She got out of the car, went into the house alone. This is after a therapy session, and we're supposedly really ready to put things back together. And I would drive to the office and stay there till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, pretending to be a loyal and committed person to my work. But I really wasn't going to my work. I was leaving my house. Then we had a breakthrough. We basically got fed up with this. We were sick of all the negativity of all these issues and all these problems. And we started to put them aside. We decided we wouldn't talk about them. We wouldn't deal with them. We wouldn't address them. We wouldn't go to therapy. We wouldn't do these exercises in these books that were trying to coach us through working through them. We would put it all aside and we would simply start to do good, positive, healthy things for our relationship. Just to connect with each other. And we used a series of positive relationship exercises, and it literally transformed our marriage. Not only did we resolve our problems, but we fell in love again. And we did it not by dealing with our problems, as serious as they were, but by establishing healthy habits that brought positive energy to our marriage. And listen carefully. This, my friends, is the solution to most marital situations. Believe it or not, the secret is to step away from your problems and to spend your time and energy building your relationship through positive actions. Now, I know this is counterintuitive, right? If you have a problem and that's the thing you want to fix, so then you go and you attack that thing that you need to fix. But I promise you, if you strengthen your relationship
most of your problems will dissipate. And what remains of them, you can deal with better in a safer, softer, and more forgiving marital environment. But if you try to solve your problems before you've done that work, before you've built up your relationship, before you've created more positive energy and goodwill, you'll make things worse. You'll really make things worse. The key to solving your problems is not so much having the key to solve your problems. It's timing. It's timing. If you are taking notes, underline that word. It's timing. You could do the same thing on day one, and it could blow up in your face, and your marriage could end. And if you did that same thing on day 60, it could solve your problem in a heartbeat. The solution is not so much the key. Very often, it's the timing with which you apply it. And usually, that's the mistake that people make. They're not sensitive to what time it is. And that's crucial. It's crucial in life. It's crucial in relationships. It's crucial in your marriage.
You know, it's like if you're a doctor and a patient comes to you and they need an operation, but they have the flu also. They're sick. So that wouldn't be the right time to operate on the patient. You don't want to operate on a patient that's sick. You want to send them home. You want to nurture them to better health. And then once they get rid of the flu, once they're breathing well, and they're in decent health, then that might be the time to perform the operation. It's like if you're at war with another country. You can't negotiate a peace treaty when you're at war. You first need to call a ceasefire and build some goodwill. Then you can negotiate a peace treaty. You see, the problem with people trying to reconcile their marriage is they're trying to do it while they're at war. They're trying to operate on a sick patient. And it's bad timing. And first you need to establish some goodwill and build up the emotional bank account between the two of you. And that creates a safer, softer, more loving and forgiving marital environment. And what you will find in most cases is that you won't even have to resolve your problem because they will simply dissolve. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't try, by the way, to solve your problems if they end up being still outstanding at a future date. And I'm not saying that you should ignore them or deny them. What I am saying is that you should table them until you've done the preliminary work that makes problem solving possible. The preliminary work, like getting a patient healthy, like establishing some goodwill and calling a ceasefire before you negotiate the peace treaty. It's the same in a marriage. You can't operate on a sick patient. You've got to first build some goodwill. You've got to call a ceasefire. And you've got to, in your marriage, temporarily, that's the key, temporarily put your problems aside. That doesn't mean that you deny or ignore your feelings about those problems. I know you're going to be struggling with your feelings about those problems, and we can work on that. But now's not the time to address them. Now's not the time to talk about them. Now's not the time to be trying to resolve them with your spouse. Now's the time to put them aside, manage your feelings about them, and go to work into your relationship to establish positive, healthy habits in order to build up the emotional bank account, infuse some goodwill. And this is the hard part. The hard part is not finding the right solution to your problems. The hard part is knowing when to resolve them. I could give you the solution to your problems, but even if you had it right now, it wouldn't be the right time. It wouldn't work. If your timing is off, problem solving can be a counterproductive experience. But if you're on time, you'll be amazed at how smoothly the process will go. So is it time to wait, or is it time to solve? The secret is to know what time it is. What time is it for you? The chances are very, very good that it's time to wait, to table your problems and issues, to put them aside, to get all that negative energy out of your heart and out of your life and out of your relationship for now, and go to work creating an environment that is ripe for resolution.
I'll give you an example. Let's say that you want to strike a business deal, and there's some issues, three or four significant issues, that are outstanding between you and this other person that you want to do this business deal with. So you could take different approaches to try to finalize this deal. One approach is, look, we have these three or four issues that we got to get through. Let me come over to your office. We'll sit down at a conference table. Maybe I'll even bring my attorneys, and we'll hammer these issues out. You tell me what you think. I'll tell you what I think. I'll present my case. You present your case. We'll see if we can grind through these issues and come up with a solution. And so I go, and I'm prepared. I mean, I have a presentation for you that would knock your socks off. It makes so much sense. Logically, it is ironclad. And you've done the same. And your perspective makes sense. And you're coming after trying to resolve your problems. And it's a grind. It doesn't really work. And in the meantime, while we're trying to do this, of course, we're sort of combative. It's a combative situation, a combative relationship, and our relationship is deteriorating while we're trying to make this deal. So if we're able to get through these issues, the chances are that the deterioration of our relationship is going to produce new issues in the future anyway. And if we're not able to get through these issues, so then we didn't really get to where we wanted to be, which was to make the deal. Now, there's another approach. Forget the lawyers. Forget the issues. Forget the conference table and forget your office. Let's go have lunch. Let's talk. Let's get to know each other. Let's have a little foreplay. And afterwards, 2 days later, I call you up because during that lunch you mentioned to me that, I don't know, you were an Orioles fan. And I call you up and say, hey, you know, did you see that play the other night? Yeah, wasn't that really interesting, you know? And we both spend some time creating a connection with each other, making ourselves more comfortable with each other, developing the relationship. And then we go back and we readdress those issues. Now, we're readdressing those issues in a totally different environment. Now it's not just the issues that are standing in the way of us making a deal. There's another dynamic which becomes even more important, which is that, hey, I want to do business with you. I like you. I trust you. We have a relationship. I want to do business with you. And that desire to do business with you allows me to see those issues and those problems in a whole new perspective. They're not as crucial anymore. I'm willing to give a little bit more. In fact, I don't even have to really give. It's not a giving because I want to make the deal. And so I'm finding a way to make it work. And by making it work, I'm really getting exactly what I want. And it's easier to make it work in that environment.
The problem in many marriages is that the couple doesn't want to make the deal. The trust level and the emotional bank account is so low that the focus remains on the issues. But without goodwill in your relationship, the marital environment is so combative that you're going to kill each other trying to move through those issues. The first step is to connect. First, you have to want to make the deal. It's like with sex. Isn't it the foreplay that determines whether penetration is smooth or rough?
I'll give you a personal example. I remember when my wife and I were really struggling. More than anything in the world, I wanted to move to a particular place. It doesn't matter where it was, the detail will only complicate the story. But I wanted to move from where we were living in Florida to a particular place. It was very important to me. It wasn't only a matter of living in the place, it was what that meant, it was what it represented, it's what I felt it would mean for our family. There was a lot more to it. It was very important to me. If you'd asked me what one of my highest values and priorities are in life, I would say that it would be to live in this place. My wife did not want to live there at all. I mean, it would be a nightmare for her to live there. She had no interest whatsoever. And this was one of the issues we were constantly back and forth on, arguing with each other. clawing at each other. It was a constant thorn in both of our sides. We could not get through this issue. And I'll tell you, we discussed it, I can't tell you how many hours. And being sort of a typical man, I was very forceful. I was incredibly logical. And my approach to this made total sense. And I was so good in my presentation of this that a few times she even looked up and said, "You know what? You're right. But I still don't want to go." It made so much sense in our heads, but that had nothing to do and no impact whatsoever in terms of what was going on in our hearts. And then, as you know, we succeeded in renewing our marriage. And I'll tell you, an amazing thing happened for me. I didn't want to move there. I didn't want to move there because I knew how much my wife didn't want to go there. And how could I possibly want to go somewhere where my wife didn't want to be? And not only that, but it wasn't just that my wife didn't want to go there and that's why I didn't want to go. The truth is, it wasn't so important to me anymore. Because what was really important to me was my marriage. And I really felt deep in my heart that I could be anywhere in the world as long as I was with my wife. I'd be happy. I'd be content. That was my highest value, not where I was living and what that meant and what that represented. Now, I'll tell you something else interesting. If I asked my wife today whether or not she would move to this place, she'd go in a heartbeat.
That is the power of foreplay.
Because the issue, the problem the whole time was not where we lived, but it was what was living inside of and between us. You see, the problem in most marriages is the way we see the problem. If you think your problem is the problem, that's the problem. It's not the problem. The problem in almost all cases is the connection and the intensity of that connection that exists and the goodwill and the emotional bank account that exists between you and your spouse. And if you can build that up, you'll experience those issues and those problems which seem to plague you day in and day out and be at the core of all your pain and frustration, you will experience them completely differently. It's not that they will go away. They might still be there, but you'll experience them differently, and you'll be able to resolve them in a friendlier, warmer, safer marital environment. This is the basis for all the work we're going to do. Boils down to three steps. Step one, set aside your problems. Get them out of the way temporarily. Key word, temporarily. I don't want you to think that I'm candy coating this and painting this unrealistic situation where you're basically going to ignore your problems forever. That's not going to happen. You can't ignore your problems forever. You're going to have to face them. You're going to have to deal with them. But you want to deal with them in the right environment at the right time. And so step one is to set them aside so you can go to work on building that goodwill and creating that environment where you can eventually resolve them. And by the way, I'm under no illusion that this is easy. We're going to get into this in a little bit. Step two, fill that void with positive energy. Do the things that will help you to create that goodwill and that positive environment. I'm going to give you a system and steps and techniques, very specific things for doing that. And step three, after you've done that, now you can go back in what hopefully will be a new marital environment and address those problems. And so, the answer to your problems is not to find a solution to your problems. The answer is to create love in your marriage. That will solve your problems. You see, this is what's really unique about the whole marriage fitness approach to relationship success. Because most approaches to marriage success preach problem solving and communication skills. But I don't think solving problems and communicating effectively will create love in your marriage. In fact, the correlation is the exact opposite. Creating love in your marriage is what will help you resolve your problems and what paves the way for effective communication. The correlation is the exact opposite of what most people think it is. I can prove this to you, by the way. Think about when you fell in love. How was your communication then? Pretty good, right? In fact, when you're in love, you could communicate with the wink of an eye, and you could finish each other's sentences, and yet you hardly knew each other and didn't have any communication techniques. Now, years later, after getting to know each other inside and out, employing psychologically tested and proven communication strategies, and taking into account all the differences between Mars and Venus, you can't communicate it all to each other. It doesn't matter how many times I say it, he just doesn't get it. It doesn't matter how I talk about it, she just doesn't understand. Communication has very little to do with techniques or knowledge of each other. It has everything to do with the depth of connection between the communicators. If you're connected, you can communicate with the wink of an eye and finish each other's sentences. And if you're not connected, you can pontificate until you're blue in the face and he or she simply won't understand. The question you should be asking is not, how do I solve my problems and communicate effectively with my spouse? The question you should be asking is, how do I create love in my marriage? I'm sure you've heard the expression, love is blind, which implies that a person in love isn't seeing something. But I don't think people in love are blind to anything. The fact that they're in love changes everything. In other words, someone in love sees things differently, not because they're blind, but because they're in love. When we're in love, things are different. And that's exactly how you make things different, by creating love and connection between you. Cinderella asks, do you love me because I'm beautiful, or am I beautiful because you love me? So now you know the answer. Now, I am well aware that tabling these issues and problems in your marriage is a lot easier said than done. And that's a very kind of broad idea and a very big thing that I've asked you to do, and I haven't yet given you the tools or the techniques to help you pull it off. So that's what I want to do now. So I want to give you five ways, five recommendations, five suggestions, five specific things you can do to keep your marriage infection-free, so to speak. There's a bunch of different ideas. They may not all apply to your situation. If you can get one out of five that you can use repeatedly that works, you'll be in like mint. So as you listen to these, I want you to eat the fruit and spit out the pit. That which doesn't apply or work for you, no problem, disregard it. That which resonates, take it in. Make a note of it. And try it. Use it. If it works, keep using it. If it doesn't work, try another one. Here's five ways to keep your marriage infection-free. Number one, walk away. If you feel that your interaction with your spouse is about to get explosive, walk away. Go into a different room. Leave the house. Do whatever you have to do temporarily to diffuse the situation. Now, I want to offer this with a big caveat. The caveat is, be intelligent about this and make sure that that really is the solution to this issue and is not going to create another problem. You see, a lot of times, a spouse will pick a fight with the other spouse, not because they really want to fight or they really want to hammer out this problem, but because they want attention. Some spouses will try to get a rise out of the other spouse because they just want to know somebody's home, that they're not being neglected. And sometimes the way to do that is to poke them a little bit, if you know what I mean. And if you can get a jump out of them, get a rise out of them so they're there. And so if that's what your if you think that's what your spouse does when they approach these issues, so don't walk out of the room because they'll feel more ignored and they'll feel more neglected, and it might make matters actually worse and actually feed the fire. But sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes they don't want attention. Sometimes they really are, they just can't control themselves. If it's the case of the duo track, and you've learned this, they can't control themselves. Or if it's the case of the Lone Ranger track, maybe they really are trying to broach this issue, and you know that it's not the right time, walk out of the room. Now remember to come back and try again. Not try again to resolve the issue, but try again to infuse more positive energy into the environment in the home. Okay? So that's one, walk away. Again, be careful with that one. Two, give in. Just do it their way. Just say what they want you to say. Do it their way for a while. You know, sometimes, if you've ever studied military strategy, sometimes you have to sacrifice a battle in order to win the war. So now, don't worry. This is not a long-term solution. If you capitulate, I'm not saying that you're going to compromise this issue and that situation forever. Again, you're going to have the opportunity to come back to these issues, but I want to give you the opportunity to do that in a transformed marital environment. So consider, if it fits for you, temporarily capitulating. Say it, do it, give in, let them have their way, and try to do it with a smile. That's two. Three, change the subject early. Give some thought to how these conversations and fights begin, how they evolve. See if you can pinpoint what triggers them. Because usually what happens is a couple gets into these discussions and these arguments and these fights, and they don't even know how they got there. It's just sort of steamrolled. They got there so fast that they don't even remember really what triggered it. But if you know the issues and you can put your finger on what triggered it and you can be aware and sensitive to those things that are creating the explosion, so you can very quickly, as soon as you see a sign of that, change the subject. And maybe it would be helpful, if you think this one applies for you, to even, you know, make a list of things that you can change the subject to so that you're really prepared to redirect the energy that's about to be created in your home. Number four. If you're in the duo track, let me give you a line. You feel the fight coming. Your spouse is about to trigger it, and you say, let's discuss this during our marriage coaching session with Mort. So you delay it. And then, when you get to your marriage coaching session with Mort, I will succeed to convince you to not discuss it even now. Push it off onto me. And maybe it is something that you should discuss. You know, you can let me know what it is. But in other words, you're essentially tapping into me as a resource to help you, number one, delay it until our marriage coaching session, and then quite likely, I will try the best I can to convince your spouse that it should be delayed even further. So four, let's discuss this during our marriage coaching session with Mort. Five, if you need to vent, if you feel that you're just exploding with this issue or this problem, write in your journal. Keep a diary. Write a letter to your spouse and let it all out. But then don't send it. Talk into a tape recorder. Make an appointment for a private session with me or with another professional and vent in that way. Get those emotions and all that's bottled up inside of you out of you. Speak it out. Scream it out. Dance it out. Go exercise and run it out. Write it out. But get it outside of you, not directed toward your spouse. And by the way, try not to talk to a friend or a family member about this. You shouldn't really be venting these things about your spouse and about your marriage with your family and friends. You need to find some neutral, objective third party. And so use me for that, because very often when people get involved in these issues and these fights, they're really not trying to resolve something. And it's really not constructive in almost all cases. They just need to let out some steam. They just need to vent. They just need to talk. That's okay. But if it's going to be a negative talk and it's not the right time, don't do it with your spouse. Now, even with these five suggestions, these five techniques, I am well aware, I want you to know that this will be difficult. These are the things that are weighing on you. These are the issues that are plaguing you, that are keeping you up at night, that are causing you pain, and that you're frustrated, and that you're feeling like you need to resolve now. I know it's hard. I feel your pain. I know the place. But you need self-control. That's why this program is a multi-sensory experience, so that you'll continually be reminded of these ideas, this approach, and this technique. You need to hear it. You need to read it. You need to see it. You need to do it. You might be thinking, it's all the same stuff. Why do I need to do it so many different times? Repetition is the mother of learning. It's so easy to slip back into your old ways unless you have somebody there on your shoulder constantly reminding you to try to change your ways. I am that person sitting there on your shoulder talking to you from my reports, from my CDs, from my seminar. Use me. Take the opportunity to keep hearing the message until you can successfully reprogram yourself. It's not going to be easy. I don't want to candy-coat it and have you think that it is. But the fact that I'm telling you that it's not going to be easy should make it easier, because you can begin to muster up the power and the strength that you're going to need to pull it off. And we're going to talk more in a second about how you can do that. So, in conclusion, I'm under no illusion that putting aside these problems is easy. And I know how much more work there is to do here. And I want you to know that we're going to utilize the different components of this program to continue to work on this. This will be a constant effort. Even though we're going to move on, we're going to go to other issues, we're going to go to specific techniques, I'm going to teach you how to create that positive energy that I've been talking about in the abstract, I know we will constantly be coming back to this issue, because I know how challenging it is. But this is the task you have in front of you, and this is what I want you to try to keep in mind. Okay. Next. I want you to begin to create a dream, a vision, an expectation. I want you to begin to fathom in your own mind, heart, and soul what you want your marriage to be like. If you're in the duo track, I want you to work on this together. It's going to take some time. If you get to nothing else this week, do this. Sit down together. It may take a few nights. Talk about it. Wordsmith it together. Write out a marriage mission statement if you're in the duo track together. One mission statement that you can begin to try to agree on. Now, as you'd go about doing this, you may bump up against some of those issues that plague you. Stay away. Do the best you can to come up with something that does not deal with those issues. If you're in the Lone Ranger track, obviously you're going to be doing this alone. In most cases, you may be able to do it with your spouse. Be careful, though. You want to make sure you make the right call here. The chances are good that you should not do it right now with your spouse. Now, I want to explain this, tell you why it's so important. Listen carefully. Everything is created twice. The first time it's created in your mind, and the second time in the reality of your life. First is the mental creation, and then is the physical creation. It's like if you want to build a house. First you make the blueprint, and then you begin the carpenter work. And if you don't take those two steps in that order, you have very expensive change orders. And that, unfortunately, is what happens in most marriages. Is we're not on the same page. We don't have a vision for where we want to go, so that when we get there, we realize this is not where I want to be, and we have very expensive and painful change orders. I want you to begin to create a vision, a picture in your mind, a mission statement for your marriage. And I don't want you to underestimate the power of this vision and the power of your imagination. This is an incredibly powerful exercise. Why? Because your imagination, your vision for your marriage is more powerful than the baggage of your past. It's more powerful than the emotional scars that are part of your personal history. In other words, we all have pain. We all have issues. We all have problems. And they are dragging us down. They are pulling us down. And I understand that. But the power of a vision, of a dream, of you imagining a new marriage for yourself, I don't mean a new person, but a new marriage, is very elevating. It's very inspiring. It begins to lift you up. And the power of that imagination and that vision, if you can really get it going in your heart and soul, is more powerful than the power of the negativity of the issues in the past and the baggage dragging you down. And so you need that dream, because it can conquer your baggage. I don't want you to think that I'm suggesting some flaky exercise here, and that you're going to forget about your current situation. Because listen to this carefully, this is important. In fact, it's your vision, and your dream that will give you the hope and therefore the strength to face the brutal facts of your reality? How are you going to be able to face the darkness of that painful reality? The only way you'll be able to face the brutal facts of what your situation really is if you have a dream and a vision and an expectation for something so much greater. You essentially draw on and reach into that dream to draw courage and strength to face the reality of your situation. If you don't have that dream, if you don't have that vision, you will deny your situation. You won't have the strength to face it. And that's what so many people do for so long, and that's how they get to where they're at, because they're not realistic about really where they're at and why they're there. And so a new vision is not an immediate substitute for your current reality. It's exactly what gives you the strength to honestly face your current reality rather than run from it and deceive yourself about it. And this, by the way, is how you become a transition person. I call it a transition person. What's a transition person? You see, most of you are in the situation that you're in because of your parents. It's true. Most of us recreate the marriage that we grew up with in our own homes. And you'll pass that on to your children and on and on and on until somebody steps up to the plate and says, no, that's it. This is done. It ends with me. I'm going to fix this, and I'm going to leave a legacy for my children and my grandchildren that'll be different in terms of what goes on in the marriage of my family. And certain family dynamics just keep getting passed down from generation to generation until someone finally steps up and says, that's it. Where do you get the power? Where do you get the courage to do that? You have to dig into your dreams. You got to dig into your expectations and your visions. Because if it's just your negativity that's surrounding you, you'll never be able to do it. You'll never find the strength. You got to begin with the end in mind. I'm going to give you the concrete steps that you can use to get to where you want to go, to realize that vision and that dream. But for now, before we get to the details of how you're going to get there, I want you to just start with the big picture. What's the dream? What's the vision? Where do you want to go? Now, the steps that I give you, I want you to know, it's going to take discipline. It's not going to be easy. What's discipline? Listen carefully. Discipline is doing what you know you need to do, what's good for you, when you don't feel like doing it. And where do you get the motivation to be disciplined? I mean, if all you're surrounded by is the negativity of your issues and your problems, where do you get the inspiration and the motivation to be disciplined and do what you need to do when you don't really feel like doing it, you're feeling terrible? From your vision. From your dreams. You draw and dip into that vision, and that's what I'm going after, and that's where you draw the strength and the courage to do what you need to do when you don't feel like doing it. You know, so many people say to me all the time, Mort, how can I do these things that you asked me to do, the things that create that positive energy? I don't feel like it. I had an email correspondence recently with a gentleman who's in that situation where his wife simply says she doesn't feel like loving him. Well, I mean, are we talking about an animal here or a human being? An animal can only do what they feel like doing. They don't have free will. They don't have free choice. But this is what is unique about a human being. We sometimes don't feel like stopping at a stop sign also, but we do because we know we need to do it. Well, we don't always feel like exercising. But sometimes you go and you do what you don't want to do because you know you need to do it, and it really is what will help you feel good eventually. And so you have to have a dream and you have to have a vision in order to find the strength to be disciplined. Discipline comes from being discipled to a cause or to a dream. And so you're not going to want to do everything you need to do for the benefit of your marriage. And that's why your dream is so important, because you draw on your strength in it to get over that hump. One ship drives east and another drives west, while the self-same winds that blow. It's the set of the sails and not the gales that tells us the way to go. Like the winds of the sea are the ways of fate as we voyage along through life. It's the set of the soul that decides the goal and not the calm or the strife. Set your sail. Set your soul into the future with a vision and a dream that's powerful. powerful enough to conquer and dwarf the pain and the baggage. That poem, by the way, was by Ella Wheeler Wilcox. I started by telling you and sharing with you some of the tragic losses that my wife and I had and how it almost completely derailed our marriage. We lost three children and almost each other. Now, I want to tell you the end of the story, because God works in funny ways. Years later, my wife and I gave birth to triplets, and we now have four beautiful children and a happy family. I promise you, I know it probably doesn't feel like it at this moment, but I promise you that God has a plan for you too, and it has a happy ending. And I'm looking forward to watching that unplanned unfold for you and getting a phone call from you one day where I can hear the smile on your face because you reached that moment.